Welcome back to the Up North Podcast. I'm Pat Kreitlow, joined by Kurt Bankstead. Kristen Bry will be back next week.
Okay, so Hans, as I said before our break, I'm a dangerous man because I've read up on dairy farming for about 4 hours today, and that's about all I know.
This is, you know, between you doing the reading up for Hans to be our guest and Kristen from Milwaukee, who's doing a report on a dairy farm right now. It's like I'm living Green Acres. I feel like we should play the Green Acres theme here. That you and Ava Gabor, you know, you're the Eddie Arnold over here. Anyway, drop some knowledge on us, Kurt.
So
here
no, we go. I want tons of drop knowledge, but I just want to be able to ask you questions. So I want you kind of like start us from not the beginning of dairy farming in Wisconsin, but kind of like where things kind of changed when times were good, dairy farmers were making money. You know, something changed in the last few years. We've heard these horrible kind of statistics that there was dairy farming's going out of business like every day or every week. And what turned the tide? Is it true that that dairy farming in Wisconsin is trending towards more harder and potentially, you know, not profitable enough, and that's why people are going out of business? What changed, and what do you think are the main reasons for that?
Well, I think it's important to understand that this is an evolution, not a revolution. Okay, I'm going to be 52 next month. I've lived in the same place my whole life. I've done this my whole life. My parents grew up on this farm. And so I've watched how this has evolved. And so with every passing year, it is the case that we have fewer and fewer dairy farms and fewer farms in general, but fewer and fewer dairy farms. And we are the dairy state. We don't lose cow numbers because those cows tend to shift. So we have, larger and larger farms, so you got more cows in one location versus lots of farms up and down the road. I have 450 cows. I purchased a few neighboring farms in my career. Land became available and I bought it so I could expand my herd because, some of it is just, the usual ambition that any small business person has. You know, you look for the next challenge and you say, okay, well, I'm gonna add a few cows, I'm gonna add a few acres and that type of stuff. But also it's financially driven because, you know, health insurance costs money regardless if you got 10 cows or 10,000 cows, you've got to buy health insurance. So there are those things to consider. I think that public policy, statewide public policy and federal public policy does matter with regard to how the dairy industry has evolved. You take Canada, for example, and a lot of dairy farmers won't be happy to hear a dairy farmer talk about this, but in Canada, they've had a quota system since like the late 60s. And so what happened there was the Canadian farmers got together and they basically lobbied the state, which is to say Canada, to say, we want to have legalized price fixing is basically what it boils down to. And the state, the federal government of Canada said, yeah, that seems about right, go for it. And so what that allowed the Canadian producers to do is to basically form, it's kind of like OPEC of dairy, if you will, and right. For these dairy farmers to get together and say, okay, we know what our demand is, and it's a moving target, but we can forecast that to a certain extent. Therefore, we will control the supply. Now, what that does is that puts farmers in a position of, okay, maybe I'd like to add 100 cows to my herd, but if I do so, I'm going to get paid next to nothing for the extra milk over my quota.
That's really what, in my mind, it comes down to is the failure to adopt or agree upon supply management. And there's been a lot of debate about whether that would be right or wrong, free market, what have you. But you know that and a host of other factors is what really I've been right, following. Go ahead, Hans.
Well, I think supply management in the dairy industry in this country has caught on a little bit. And one of the reasons why is because...
But far too late. I mean, this is something that should have been talked about 30 years ago.
Right, exactly. And I don't know if we'll ever get over that hump because, as I mentioned earlier, you've got 25 cow grass-based dairies, you've got 5,000 cow dairies. Their worldviews are different, their interests are different.
Yeah, the game is totally different now.
But I think it's important for consumers and farmers and, you know, conservative politicians to understand that up in Canada, both the conservatives and the progressive politicians like the system. And the reason why the conservatives like the system up there is because the dairy industry in Canada has never asked for dime one from the taxpayers. Whereas in this country, regardless if you got a big herd or a small herd, every time the milk price takes a crap, then some politicians feel sorry for the dairy industry, and because we've got our hand out, and we take taxpayer dollars to subsidize our operations to keep them going. That does nothing to reduce the supply, and it only gives our consumers heartburn and our taxpayers heartburn.
I think it's
incumbent upon the dairy industry to take responsibility and say, we've created this problem ourselves. It should be on us to handle it. So the idea that this is somehow anti-capitalist or anti-free market is nonsense. I think it's anti-free market to take taxpayer dollars and hand them to me because my industry hasn't done a good job in controlling the supply.
Right, as has happened in so many industries.
I got one more question maybe before we go to the gerrymandering topic. You told us the past and some of the evolution. Are small dairy farms are going to be obsolete, and it's going to be corporate, big, huge behemoths are going to kind of run the industry in Wisconsin?
I hope not. I mean, that's certainly the trend that we've seen, but I think there are a lot of smaller producers that are doing all right. They're making money because they're very smart. They're very driven. I think it's also a fact that most dairy farmers, especially small family farms, have someone in the family who works off the farm to get not only additional income, but also to supply the healthcare, the health insurance. So I'm not ready to, put the last nail in the coffin of the small producer, but I do think that, having some kind of a supply management system would help to beat hell. I think having what the state can do, what the state of Wisconsin at Madison, what we can do public policy wise there is to make sure we've got local control so that counties and townships can decide themselves if somebody wants to go from, 1,000 cows to 10,000 cows, that the people living next door whose property values might be negatively impacted have something to say about that. And I think then that's very organically going to keep the proliferation of the mega dairies to a minimum. And again, I don't want to sound all anti-mega dairy because I know some of these guys and they're wonderful people and hard workers and they're good guys. But
you got to treat them like a factory. It is a factory farm, and factories have rules regarding pollution and things like that.
Absolutely.
And a factory farm should be the same way. Yes, you can exist so long as you can exist just like any other factory would. Get your permits.
Right.
Things like that.
Exactly. But again, getting to what we can do then public policy wise at the state level, because I feel like your audience is a state level kind of a thing, is we have to make sure that the DNR is not politicized, that the DNR follows science and so forth. Keep the DNR independent and doing its job. And we need to make sure that we've got good infrastructure and we need to make sure we have good local control so that localities can make these decisions. Because you might have a locality that says, yeah, somebody's looking for a permit for 1,000 cows, and you might say, yeah, this makes perfect sense in our area. You're going to have other areas that say, no, we don't want that here, and that's legit too, because it may impact water, and it certainly impacts property values and so forth.
Sure.
And the impact on the roads.
Again, as long as you've got a DNR that's not politicized and actually looks out for the state's resources. Our guest is Hans Breitenmoser, a dairy farmer from Merrill. He's also active in the push to get rid of Wisconsin's gerrymandered maps. And so, Hans, let's pivot there. And as we explain what exists in Wisconsin now, let me ask a personal question. How did you first decide to get involved with gerrymandered maps? What was it that stuck with you when you learned about this and said, I want to be active and tell people that we can do better than this?
Yeah, well, I've been on the Lincoln County Board of Supervisors since 2012. And it was in 2017, late 2016, early 2017, where I sort of became aware of the impact of having gerrymandered districts, which is to say at the county level, I really didn't feel like our representatives in Madison were really listening to us because I felt like at the county board level, we'd sit around and we talk about, road funding dried up, can't do anything, levy limits. Well, our hands are tied there. We see all these things at the local level and we're like, well, why aren't we able to do anything? Why don't we have any resources? Why don't we have any money? And why aren't, this is a democracy. What's the problem? Well, when you start to understand how the lines are drawn and start to understand who's actually running things, which is to say political party bosses, then you understand that that's the root of the problem. So I felt like at the county level, we're dealing with symptoms and dealing with symptoms. And I think it's analogous to, you know, my life on the farm. I mean, you can, you know, deal with a symptom. That's fine to, you know, put out today's fire, but you have to look at, okay, what's the root cause of these problems? And it became clear that we have the root cause is the gerrymandered districts and the influence of money in our political system. So until and unless we root those out, we're stuck with the same sort of maybe not great public policy.
So Hans, that's got you into it. On the back of my Fair Maps can, I list some statistic that say, you know, like something like 50 some counties out of the 72 counties have all had referenda that they've voted in for Fair Maps. Like 80% of people who get this question posed to them are like, of course we want Fair Maps. Tell me, you're the one who kind of started getting these referenda kind of in small towns up in northern Wisconsin, central northern Wisconsin. How did you start doing that? I mean, tell me about the history of these referenda and why a lot of us know about this issue now.
Well, for starters, I think I get way more credit than I deserve. What I did in 2017 was draft a resolution, and basically that resolution was had already passed in Wood County several years before. So there was a handful of counties, county boards, who had passed resolutions, but then it kind of petered out and died off. So in 2017, I'm looking at this gerrymandering thing and I'm thinking, okay, what can I do from my slightly elevated perch on the county board? It's the county board. There's only so much for them to do, right? and so some of these things you do to sort of draw attention. So in spring of 2017, I draft this resolution. I'm on the administrative and legislative committee and I count the votes and I'm thinking, yeah, I can get this through A&L and therefore it'll get to the full county board. And I thought about it and I'd like, yeah, I think we can get it to pass on the full county board. And it should have, it's symbolic, but it should have, you know, an impact. And I think maybe it was just the timing was right, but I also think the fact that Lincoln County, podunk little Lincoln County, which is in most people's eyes seen as a red, you know, basically our county board in 2017 said, yes, we want a nonpartisan procedure for drawing these lines. And it passed overwhelmingly. We didn't get 100% of the county board supervisors on the bus, but the vast majority of them said, yes, of course we should do that. And then, you know, it occurred to me as I was going through the trouble that it's not good enough for us to just say this so that we hear it ourselves in the boardroom. The point is in order for it to have any kind of impact, we need to make sure the world knows about it. So I made sure that, you know, and by then I had connections with Wisconsin Farmers Union, who is an advocate for Fair Maps, and all, you know, the other Fair Maps people who existed at that time around the state. And I tried to, you know, sort of make a little bit of noise about it. And that seemed to reverberate. And so pretty soon people were emailing me and calling me and, you know, how did you do that in Lincoln County? How can we do it here? So it just sort of took off from there. And then the next logical step was the referendums. And, you know, we didn't know for sure what to expect, but in the fall of 2018, when we voted for nothing but Republicans up and down the ballot in Lincoln County, 65-ish% of us also voted in favor of a nonpartisan procedure. So it was one more way, and I think a far more impactful way than the resolutions to get our politicians to listen. And I think
it's worked. It's worked. That's the short.
Not
worked to get something done at the legislative level. But what has happened is because they see that there's no action happening, it only reinforces the notion that, you know, the there is gerrymandering, that these legislators are not accountable to what such a vast majority of their constituents want. So Hans, thank you again. It was great to talk with you. We really appreciate it. Please come back again and we'll spend some more time on both issues here.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, we will be back to wrap up the show in a bit. You're up north.